This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com. Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. Today, my guest is Heather Wild, who was the 8th employee of Evernote, where she oversaw the company's growth from thousands to 100 million customers. She's published popular games, trained Fortune 500 brands, advised hundreds of startups, and managed some of the major nonprofit corporations. Now, as CTO at The Difference, her award-winning work keeps the unicorn whisperer constantly traveling across the globe to find the next unicorn. Heather, I can't thank you enough for coming on this show. I can't wait to hear about your experience at Evernote and what you're doing right now as a CTO. Welcome.
Thank you, Maria. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just so excited about this interview. I've been waiting all weekend, so I can't wait to jump in. So if you want to start with how you got into this, how your Evernote journey began, that would be a great start.
So it was really the Evernote journey actually started about 8 years before Evernote, back in Boston. Some friends and I, overnight successes never happen overnight, right? Some friends and I were starting a company right after 9/11 happened. And like, we were in Boston, which is where one of the planes took off. And we were all from New York City initially. And we were all very sad sitting on our couches watching CNN and flipping from news channels over and over again. And we basically decided that we didn't want anything like that to ever happen again. So we decided to start a company called Core Street that would help the government and the world to change so that that would never happen again. And within 5 years, we had created a door lock that is now basically all around the world and including in airplane cockpits. Wow. That is, anytime you hold up a key card near a door, it makes sure that you are the person that should be there. That was what we did. And but none of us really wanted to work with the government forever. So after 5 years of doing that, we wanted to solve a new world problem. And the CEO of that, Phil Libin, he figured out how to sell that company to our government contractors and moved out to California. And started working on like, what is the next real world problem that should be solved? And that one, a lot of people may not realize this, but Evernote was his idea to solve.
Wow. I've used Evernote back. I remember back in 2011, 2012. Am I right? But the years I remember. So I was life-saving for me. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the tagline is remember everything. And that was actually like, so we went from figuring out like how to identify who you are, to identify a person, making sure that they are who they say they are, to going to like, what is the essence of a person's brain and their memories. And when you distill that down to a computer program, we wanted to live stream a person's event, capture all of their memories into one place, and then remember it for you. And that is the unicorn idea behind Evernote. And that's what we set out to create. And that's what we did.
How was the growth process? I mean, growing from thousands of customers to 100 million, that's, I can imagine how, I mean, I help startup tech companies who get funded millions of dollars to scale and grow their customer acquisition. And I know that a lot of the problems, especially if they're in a product-based business, is keeping up with inventory. I'm curious to know what kind of problems you guys came across. Since you didn't have inventory, it was more of the software, the technology supporting these people. What were some of the challenges you dealt with?
Well, one of the things, you'll notice that you keep saying that we started with thousands and then went to 100 million. Well, that's because we actually found a startup that had already stalled and that had a similar idea. And so we we purchased that startup, like we merged with them, and we took their idea and ran with it. So they already had a user base of about 5,000 people that loved it, but it just wasn't going anywhere. And figuring out how to scale a company is something that a lot of people can't get past. So I'll just take that original idea. So their concept was to help researchers to store their research on Windows machines, and then also to help them like on Windows tablets, like that you could write on. So to store like from things in the field to desktop computers. And so what we wanted to do was to take that and grow it to, this is before the iPhone existed, to the web. So we wanted to bring that Windows thing to other machines because Macs existed, the web was starting to be a thing, and then potentially to BlackBerries and Palm Pilots and other things like that. And then Steve Jobs came out and announced the iPhone. And we said, this is going to be amazing. We need to be in that app store on day one. The way that we figured out how to scale was take this Windows only product and bring it to everyone.
Genius. Wow. Well, as you mentioned, scaling a company is really challenging. I mean, that's sort of where we come in as an agency. We find the best platforms and the advertising channels to help companies like yours that are very disruptive to scale. And it takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of hard work to scale a company. I'm just curious, did you guys get funding to get through that scale, get to the next level, or what were some of the steps you guys took?
So we, this is before the iPhone, of course. So I'm dating us to around 2007 is when Evernote was really getting started. And for those of you that were born around 2007, you may not remember, but this was a very volatile phase. Everyone was getting funded for tons of money. There was money being thrown. So we had something like 15 million or something like that, that was ready to come in to our coffers. And then on the day that the check was supposed to show up, the wire transfer was supposed to come in, Bear Stearns announced that they were out of business. This was the day of the crash. Yep. Into and so suddenly our little company that was supposed to have funding had nothing. And so we had to learn how to bootstrap we were already bootstrapping, but like this was at a crucial point where we were supposed to grow because like we were just about to hit 1 million users and like you can't really bootstrap at that point. So we just had to figure out everything we could to stay alive. Phil Libin was about to close the company because he's just like, there's nothing we could do. So he just put out like into the universe. He's like, somebody asked him like, is there anything I can do to help? I really love you. And he's like, yeah, if you can send us $500,000 to make payroll by tomorrow, then that would be great. And he just was joking. And then in the morning there was $500,000 in the bank account.
Wow. That's so inspiring. That's inspiring. So tell me about your journey. How is it, you know, just being a part of this amazing company that grew so fast and went through realistic challenges that most startups go through, having to bootstrap? That's usually the case for most startups. And how that actually got you here today and what you're doing and how, you know, I just want to learn about that.
So, I mean, as I mentioned, like this was not the first company that I'd worked with this team. So I had a little bit of an idea of what I was getting into, and all of us did. So that helped me to get through, that helped me to plan what the roller coaster was going to be like, at least as much as one can. So I knew that I needed to have some stability as far as my location. So what I did was I moved onto a sailboat in Mexico so that I could be at least calm in my environment for all of the crazy that was happening around me. And And a lot of us actually from that original team, like we lived remotely for a similar reason. As the company was getting bigger and growing up, like we would just come in for our quarterly meetings, but we were just remote. Even back in 2008, like we were just like on Skype and doing Yahoo Messenger for for our calls. And but I mean, I was working 7 days a week, 18-hour days to get this business off the ground. I was just doing it from the deck of a boat in Mexico, and it was crazy, like building teams, making sure that everyone was communicating. And that was the key, because if anyone dropped the ball, if anyone didn't know what anyone else was doing, then, we would have been sunk. But because people around the world, like the 450 employees we had in 9 countries, speaking 36 different languages to all of our customers, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, because there's no holidays culturally, this was a massive undertaking. And for the 6 years that I did this, 6 years straight with no days off, it was insane.
Yeah, but you know, we always have the saying that in startup world, a year is like 7 years, and it's, you know, 6 years is like, yeah, it's a lot of the years. I obviously met you through this book. Okay. Mm-hmm. Amazing. before you tell me about what you're doing currently, I just want to touch upon this book a little bit, just talk about, have you just discuss at least a few of the steps that you think are important for anyone who's running a company or who's scaling a company or is just starting a company and their mission is to become a unicorn company. I mean, obviously most people are wishing that they can get funded and grow really rapidly and be able to sell it. But what would you, from the book, to just summarize, what would you recommend for the listeners to start implementing in their lives?
So the main thing about the book and the motivation behind writing it is because a lot of business books are written from the perspective of, I've been successful and here's exactly what I did, but it's never going to apply to you anyway, because like your business isn't like me, but I mean, here's what I did anyway. And like, yay, try it, but it's not going to work. So, I wrote this book it's a very different kind of business book. It's kind of like a story that you can see yourself in. And the most important steps that I see in it are for you to put yourself in the perspective of like, who am I, and who do I want to be? So if you look into the future, like take yourself 5, 10, 15 years from now, beyond this company, beyond this project that you are starting, and figure out why is it that you are doing it in the first place? And what is it that you want to see yourself as at the end? Then figure out what was the whole point. So in the book, I talk about making sure that you take time for yourself, figuring out what your basic needs are, like, and making sure that you fulfill them along the way. But if you're not there at the end, then there was no point. For example, like I do some coaching for CEOs and CTOs on the side. Like that's like, I'm not trying to coach people. I don't take very many people on, but one of the CEOs that I coach, like his main reason for doing it is to spend more time with his family. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't spend any time with his family because he's spending all of his time in his company. So I had him write a post-it note to put on his desk right in front of him so that it's like, I am doing this to spend more time with his family. And every time he like sees that, he actually stops and calls his family and FaceTimes his baby or whatever, because like he remembers that like I'm having all these long days so that I can quit early, so that I can spend time with them, not so that he can be the absent dad.
I love that. And I think, you know, in your book, you talked about life and work balance, which, You know, I've come to a conclusion that it's really hard to say that you have to, it's impossible to balance work and life when you're an entrepreneur, when you're running your own company, and because emergencies and fires can go on anytime, and you can't just say, oh, it's after six, I can't deal with that right now. You just jump in and deal with it. You know, that's just the way it is. And I've learned to, I know for a long time, I was always struggling to create that work and life balance where I had all these strict structured hours. And I was like, I'm going to work between this hour and that hour, take Sundays off. And I realized that that was putting more pressure on me. And if anything, it was stressing me out more, because then I felt like almost like on a wire to just, you know, play this role. And the minute I realized that I need to just let it intertwine and just go with the flow, be in the flow a little bit more. And if I have 15 minutes today to have a quick walk with my daughter and just talk to her, then I'm going to do it. But I'm not going to put it on the calendar and stress myself out, you know, and then do it. And so I think I'm there almost, but still working on it, especially I'm having my third child. So that's a whole different challenge now that I have to figure out how to overcome and make time for this new human being in my life that on top of the two companies that I'm running. So I'm a little stressed over that, but I do trust the fact that if I don't overthink it and just go with the flow, I'll figure it out. What advice would you give to someone like me who's about to give birth any day now, literally?
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm due any moment now. What would you suggest for me to think about or do that I probably am not doing yet in terms of dealing with work and life balance as a mom, as a wife, as an entrepreneur? It's just, it's been challenging.
The thing that I tell all moms I'm trying to think of a PC way to say this. It's okay to take time for yourself. Like, I mean, I know that the number one thing that a mom has to do is to protect their child, is to spend time with their child, is to put their child first. Like, in order to do that, you have to take care of yourself. And so sometimes you have to actually be selfish in order to take care of other people. So the number one thing that you need to do is to communicate with the people around you that, like, when you do need time for yourself, that you do, and why. So it's not, and then it's not selfish. Then they understand, like, this is time that mommy needs to take, that wife needs to take, that owner, business owner needs to take in order to come back recharged. And sometimes that's like, you need to go away for an hour. Sometimes that's, you need to go away for a week. But like, if they know ahead of time that you need to do this, then they'll support you in that. Even your kids. Like, I mean, my dad would need to do this like when I was a kid, and he would tell me. And like, then when he would come back, I'd be like, oh my God, my dad's awesome. But like, he would tell me, and then I would support him doing that, and I'd know why. So yeah. It's all about being communicative with the people around you, trusting that they've got your back, even your kids.
Good point. And I think that's one thing that I haven't been doing much, taking that time. I mean, I do have my morning rituals where I'll wake up early before everyone's awake and do my meditation and just set the intention for the day. I feel like that's like the one thing that I have that no one can take away, because mm-hmm. I wake up so early to do it. But now I'm like, with the baby, am I going to be able to do it? I'm just a little bit terrified how I'm going to adjust to the new norm of having to take care of a little baby and all of that. But I think, to your point, you know, maybe prioritizing to get help at that time so that I can continue doing that, because that's the one thing that keeps me balanced throughout the day, at least knowing that I got a chance to meditate and go for a walk and take some time, an hour and a half at least in the morning for myself before I take on the day. But in terms of when people say work and life balance, what do you think of when they say that? Like
that they're lying. No, like it's all about like work-life integration. Because and people think this is a new concept, but it's not. I mean, like, think that, like, I have a degree in medieval literature, and like, the women of the Middle Ages were just killing it. Like, they were running households.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.